Well, hello and welcome to Radio. I'm your host, Ray Weaver. Sorry I missed a show or two in the transition between coming back from the U.S. to Denmark and settling back in on jet lag and time zones and stuff. I think I might have missed a show or two in there. I really do try to keep up, but there's a lot of stuff going on. One of the things that happened to me since we talked last is I actually got a job, gainful employment. Someone expecting me, of all people, to be in the same place day after day after day, doing the same thing. Now, I haven't done that for a long time, and it takes a while to get used to that again. I'm used to going out, playing my little songs, telling my little stories, and pretty much having the rest of my time to myself to do stuff like this radio show, stuff that I enjoy. But unfortunately, someone has decided that they want me to write stuff for them again. So that's going to take up a certain amount of time, but it does help me find some more good stories to tell you guys about. So we've been talking a lot about my mom's house and going back to, you know, Maryland and to my old hometown and going through all those memories now that my mom's passed away and my dad's passed away some years ago. And I'm essentially an orphan. I mean, it happens to all of us, but it's still a shock when it happens to you. It really is. But I'm going to be doing some more of that as I'm headed back to the U.S., believe it or not, in March. I'm headed back in, well, it is March. I'm headed back in just a couple of days to go back and do some more music and do some more work on the house. My son's going to come with me. I think maybe I'm going to try to coerce him to be on the show with me. We'll see how that goes. And it's going to be a little bit more upbeat, a little bit more joyous. I go back to do the St. Patrick's Day shows, and those are fun. Those are fun. I'm going to try to record the live show that I'm doing there on March the 20th. That way I can share it with all of you here, all you folks that have been so loyal about listening to the shows. So we're going to get back into that. But right now, let's talk about radio, because the name of the show is Radio. And the idea behind the show was originally to talk about my days in small town radio, completely free form. I have no agenda, no plan, no thoughts about what's going to happen until I hit the microphone switch and say, hey, let's start talking. But there's a lot of stories to go through in small town radio, which I don't know. It's my impression that it just doesn't exist anymore, that you can hear the same voices on five or six different stations coming at the same time and pretending to be your local DJ. And they've never been anywhere near your town. And that's a pity. That's just wrong, in my opinion, because, man, those small town radio stations, the small town radio stations I worked out, they were, you know, part of the community. People knew me. They knew who I was, and they'd ask me the weather, and they'd talk to me about the news, talk to me about some of the records I was playing. And, the records, man, the records. DJs in those days, we could pick a certain number of our own records. We could, you know, program our own shows. We would go in, I would go in maybe half hour, 15 minutes early, my show, and there were stacks of wax. Yes, the stacks of wax, they were there. And you just picked out some songs. Now, I'm working it at this station, and this station is middle of the road, adult contemporary, elevator music. So I'm doing everything I can to undermine that particular process and pick up stuff that I like and stuff that I want to put in there. Because, you know, I was a kid. You know, I didn't want to play Mantovani and Lenny D and Burt Camfort records all day long. I just didn't want to do it. I have nothing personal against Peggy Lee or Lawrence Welk, but it wasn't to my musical taste in those days. So I'd always try to subvert it by having some acoustic stuff in there, try to slip in a Lobo record, which was only slightly less saccharine and disgusting, but at least it had some lyrics and an acoustic guitar in it. So I do those kind of things. But as I said, this show was day parted. Every day part had different music. The morning stuck to the Mantovani stuff. The noontime stuff was a country show. There was a country show there for a couple of hours. And then in the afternoon, when the kids were getting out of school, someone decided it would be very hip and very cool to have the Rock and Roll Party. That's exactly what it was called, the WDDY, Woody Rock and Roll Party. I'm not making that up. And they would play basically what of the Billboard hits they could grab that week and also try to augment it with whatever rock and roll records were lying around, because being a small AM station, we didn't get, you know, full service from any of the record companies. But what we did get, which was great, if you had the right attitude about it, was full service from every person that had $1,000 in their pocket and a dream, or maybe in those days it was only $500, to get into a recording studio because they had a song that they knew was as good as anything that was on the radio, and they wanted to have you play their song. So they'd go to a local studio, or maybe they'd even go all the way over to Nashville, and they would get this record made. They'd have some local pickers play on it. I mean, maybe you guys have seen that scene in Coal Miner's Daughter where Sissy Spacek is playing Loretta Lynn and the pickers come in and they make the record. And then she and her husband do a little ride all over the South and all over town, taking that record to DJs and trying to get DJs to play it. That stuff happened back in the day. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your point of view, the records that came in weren't always as good as what Loretta Lynn was bringing in. They were pretty much uniformly horrible, but they were so much fun. You'd have a guy come in that had been an auto mechanic his whole life, and his buddies told him he could sing, and he'd bring in his record, and, you know, he'd say, "Hey, man, you know, listen, I just, if you could just give me some airplay, and, you know, just so people could hear it. So, yeah, I think it's pretty good. You know, I think it sounds a lot like Ricky Skaggs or Willie Nelson or Conway Twitty." And you'd play it, and it sounded nothing like any of those people. It sounded nothing like any of those people. It sounded like a guy in a garage with a bunch of local pickers beating something out that might have passed muster at 2 o'clock in the morning at a nightclub somewhere. But hey, he was a striver. He was there doing it. He was trying. And I was always the guy. I was always the guy because I was a soft heart and a musician myself. So I'm like, yeah, I'll play it. I'll play it. And the boss would yell at me because I would play literally some of the worst records you've ever heard in your life. I would play them because, you know, the folks were doing it. I mean, this was, especially during the country show, that's where you would get the really sketchy stuff. The country music show. And some of these people were serious about this, man. They had made two or three records. They had invested serious money in these records, and they had picture sleeves, and they had a, you know, studio that they went to. Some of them even went down to Nashville for what was called the Country Radio Seminar back in those days, where the big acts and the big record companies would set up these ornate booths, and everybody would sign autographs, and you'd be down there, and whoever was hot at the time, maybe the band Alabama or Cal Smith or maybe even Tammy Wynette or somebody that far up the food chain, would be there for a little while to sign fans. It was a DJ convention is what it was. It was just, you know, country music DJs down there getting ridiculously drunk and acting stupid, and everybody was there to try to convince these DJs to play their records. But along with the big acts, you would have all of the small acts, or the small acts that could afford to set up some sort of little booth inside a corner or way away from where the main acts were setting up their booths, maybe out on the street. You'd get folks setting up and they'd have their records, people you'd never heard of, but they'd have their records and they'd be there in full cowboy or cowgirl regalia. They'd be just ready to go, man. And they'd have their records and they'd be waiting for you to come and ask for their autograph, and very few people did. And I loved these records. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought they were some of the best things that we got in. So I actually managed to find a couple of tunes by one of my favorite artists from those days. Now, these songs are by a housewife from Pennsylvania, and I think she might still be around. And now we're going back into the 70s here, but I'm not sure. But she was a housewife from Pennsylvania. She played her own piano, and then sometimes she had other musicians record with her. And her name is Edna Mae Henning. Now, Edna, I talked to Edna on the phone back in the day. Unfortunately, I didn't record the interview. She was dead serious about her music, and she had kids, and she was also wrote poetry, and some of her poetry showed up in various compilation magazines and stuff like that. And she loved her music. She went to the DJ convention in Nashville to try to promote her music. She was a lovely, lovely woman. And I'm going to play a couple of her songs for you. I think I'm going to start with I Can't Get Over Losing You from Edna May Heading.
So good, honey, am I gonna knock on wood? 'Cause it isn't doing good for you and me. Oh, I can't get over you, honey. Right now I'm triply blue, and tonight I'll wait for you, honey. What if I?
Our friends, that is authentic country music. It doesn't get any more real than Edna May. And it's just, I just love it. I love it. I know you think that I'm kidding around, but I'm not. I just love it. I loved her authenticity. I love the fact that she just brought those records in. She wrote those songs herself. She brought them in and she wanted DJs to play them. And in that time frame, we did. We did. We played them. My boss actually got mad at me because I played Edna May Henning so much on the country show. There apparently was some blowback from some of the listeners along the way. I don't know why. I have no idea why. I think it's great. Now, the only thing about that particular song, I think I'll play another one by Edna May for you, because the only thing about that particular song that's not really indicative of her music is that most of the time, Edna May made her records on an incredibly out-of-tune upright piano. Now, on that particular song, she's using, as you can hear, an electric piano, and I think that there's a bass player playing along with her. So, I think, you know, it's not really like her records normally were. You don't hear Edna May just going to town on that old upright piano that she had on her house, had in her house there in Pennsylvania. So I'm going to play another song by her. It's called Please, Mr. DJ, where Edna May just lets go on that piano.
Please,
I just can't be beat. And I let it go so maybe you could hear some of the record scratches, you know, because record scratches were also part of the thing back in those days. You had to play records. You know, how do you do this thing called slip cue? I don't know whether you guys know what slip cueing is, but it's like these huge turntables. They were metal, the huge turntables, and you wanted to kick off the record right at the start. So you would take and you would put the turntable in neutral and you would, you know, slip it up. So, you know, you'd spin it with your hand and you'd bring the needle right up to the first groove, back it up a little bit, and then put the turntable in gear. And then you would hold the record with your finger and you would actually play the record by lifting your finger off and boom, you would hit it. And I was very, very proud of the fact that I was extremely good at slip cueing back in the day, a totally useless skill now, along with my great abilities to splice audio recording tape. No one cares. I learned how to do it. I went to a broadcasting school. I learned how to do those things. That's probably the only two skills I ever really learned in broadcasting school, other than how to, you know, drink beer after class and stuff. But I mean, that was Edna Mae Henning. Now, Edna, as I said, I really like this music. And I know, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I have a lot of these really, really classic country and local records that people used to drop off to me. And if you enjoy it in the show, just let me know, because I'll drop one in now and then so you can hear something beyond the mainstream, something beyond the everyday. You were not going to hear, even in the day, you weren't going to hear Edna Mae Henning on the radio unless you were listening to a small town radio station somewhere. Because right about then, right about the 70s, mid-70s toward the end of 70s, which is, in my opinion, where things start to go to hell in a handbasket on in a lot of ways, they started tightening up playlists. They started stopping DJs from picking their own records. They stopped personality on the radio. So for me, you know, to be able to do that was just so amazing. On my first couple, three radio jobs, I could actually have a little personality. I could pick some of my own songs. I could do some things that, you know, you just don't see or hear anymore in this digital homogenized world that we all live in now. There was nothing homogenized about being in Gloucester, Virginia. You were in Gloucester, Virginia. You had no connection with the outside world via the internet. I cannot, again, stress to younger people or to someone who didn't grow up in that age to understand that you were where you were. You were not anywhere else. You were not on the World Wide Web. You were not connected to everything. You lived where you were at that moment. And it was amazing. I would not have learned to be the person that I am, learned how to live with people in the way that I did, unless I was forced, basically, to find myself where I was and meet people where they were. It was a truly life-changing experience for me and made me, in my mind, a better person. Now, I'm not saying that I did everything perfectly while I was on the air at the little radio stations. I was known to do some sketchy things. One of my favorites was, now, again, you have to try to picture this in your mind. I'm talking to you about these huge turntables, these huge turntables where you played records. And a lot of times in those days, going back then, the kind of shows you hear on a Saturday or Sunday morning, maybe a garden show or maybe a church broadcast, or some sort of transcribe programs is what they were called. They were called transcribe programs. They came in often every week, like American Top 40 or the Country Music Countdown. They came in on big, full-sized 33 and a third RPM recordings, records. Some of them were even bigger than that. They came in on 16 revolutions per minute records. They were very large, and they had a lot of program on them, on a very large disc, which was very, very, very fragile, which is the point of this story. I'm not sure what show it was, but it was a weekly show. It came in every week, and we ran it on the weekends, say Saturday, say Sunday, but it was in the morning for sure. And so it could have very well been a religious broadcast. I think it was something we ran on a Sunday morning. It came in on one of those big, flimsy discs. And so, you know, I came in on my early morning shift, like I always did, dead tired, like I always was, drinking coffee like it was water. And now I'm just a kid, and I have not really developed a tolerance to coffee at that point. I was kind of new at being a coffee addict. So I'm pumping down coffee like it's going out of style and trying to stay awake. It's early in the morning, and I go through the news, and I go through the early log to get done what we have to get done, because I know that all of Sunday morning, probably into the afternoon till the ball game comes in, is going to be all religious programming. So I'm not particularly excited about my day's duties at that point, but I had a plan. I had a plan. So let's say I go through the first hour, dawdling around through a few records, do the news, get the commercials in, and then at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock, I have this transcription ready to go on the big disc. And it plays for a half hour, or say 27 minutes. And then in between, while I'm flipping it over, I'll run a few commercials, and then we'll play the other side. Easy peasy. Not going to be any problem. Not going to be any issues, right? So I do that. I put that big old transcription, that big old black vinyl transcription on the turntable, lay it right there on the felt, get it going, kick it off at 16 glorious revolutions per minute. And whatever it is, some sort of religious organ just starts playing, the big chords are going, and some guy starts preaching. I make sure they're good to go, and I decide that I'm going to go down to my car, which is parked beside the station, and I'm going to work on my car for a half hour, because my car was messing up, and I finally got a car, and I'm going to work on it. So it's parked next to the station. Won't be any problem. I just keep an eye on my watch, you know, and I'll run upstairs in good time, catch the transcription as it runs out, play the three commercials, flip it over, and go back downstairs. That was a solid plan. That's what I was going to do. And that's what I did. So I get this thing going, and I go downstairs. It's a nice summer day outside, windows are open. Now, the problem was, I didn't have a radio in my car. So I didn't really have any way to listen to what was going on. And I had my hood up, and I'm underneath the car, and I'm working on it. I think I'm trying to replace a bad battery cable, or maybe do something with the water pump. I'm not really sure. It's old 67 Chevrolet station wagon, just a true beater. And station wagon had a mattress in the back and a cassette tape deck. No radio, of course, but the cassette tape deck had to be there. And I'm working on my car, and I'm thinking, this is great, man. I'm getting this done, and I'm at work, and I'm getting paid for this, and it's all rolling, right? So, yeah, I mean, I do that. And about 23, 24 minutes, I run upstairs. Transcription's still going strong. Preachers are still preaching. Organ's still playing. Choir's still singing. Everything is just rocking right along. I wait till they give the signal that they're going to take a break. I pump into three commercials, promote the Oriole game coming up in the afternoon, and just flip it over. Get it kicking again, go back downstairs and start working on my car again. So I'm down there, beautiful sunny day, just, you know, getting the car wrapped up, a little greasy, got something on my t-shirt, you know, I'm wearing a t-shirt and a baseball cap, and I'm a little bit of a mess. But hey, it's Sunday, no one's going to see me, right? Well, they are, but that's another story, we'll talk about that in a minute. But so I'm just doing this thing, right? And all of a sudden, I see my boss pull up out front of the station. Now, he doesn't see me because I'm kind of tucked around the side of the Coca-Cola bottling company that was the home to the radio station. I'm kind of tucked around the side, so he didn't really see me. And he goes thundering in the front door and running up the steps. And I'm like, uh-oh, this can't be good. And yeah, you've already guessed it, haven't you? Those of you of a certain age, you've already guessed what happened. Yeah, about 10 minutes into that transcription, that transcription started skipping, stuck right in the same spot. Let's just say that the preacher was yelling, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise over and over and over again for who knows how long, because the show was supposedly just about to run out, because I had been thinking about that I need to get up the steps and get back into the next part of the program, and he'd been yelling that for a long time. So I go running in the door, And my boss is standing there looking at me. He'd skipped it now, so this guy's not yelling, "Praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus," over and over again anymore. But he's not happy with me at all. I know he's surprised by that information, but he's not happy with me at all. And mentions the fact that he's not paying me to work on the car, mentions the fact that I'm supposed to stay in the studio when I'm on the air, mentions the fact that this is my job. Now, I'm saying this in much nicer terms and with a lot less interesting language and a lot lower volume that he was informing me of all these things. But the thing was, I had a trump card here. I had a card in my pocket that he knew that I had, and he knew that I knew that I had, in that he was paying me absolutely no money to work at this little radio station. There were people that were picking flowers on the side of the highway for the state that were getting more money than I was. So I knew that this was a serious infraction. There was no question. But I knew that this wasn't a firing infraction. I knew that he wasn't going to fire me. I knew he was going to yell at me. I figured he might even dock my pay. He didn't, but I figured he might. I knew he was going to yell, and I knew he was going to probably yell at me again for a couple of days because he was that kind of guy. But he wasn't going to fire me because I hadn't, you know, burned the radio station down or anything like that. I mean, I did set it on fire later, but that's another story. And so, you know, he left, and the transcription finished, and all was right with the world. And then we did the news, and now my favorite part of Sunday morning is about to start. Now, we played Edna Mae Henning, Edna, earlier in the show, and Edna had a magnificent country voice. She had that twang. She had that serious twang going on. So what's about to happen now, and you kind of have to picture this in your mind, is that a preacher's going to come upstairs. A minister from the local Baptist church is going to come upstairs, and he's going to be about a 55-year-old version of Elvis Presley. He's going to have that jet black dyed shoe polished hair slicked straight back, man. Just enough oil on there that I should have had them down there working on my car with me. And he's wearing a rather somber black suit, but he's got a very, very bright colored tuxedo shirt on, red maybe, probably red, with a bolo tie, you know, one of those cowboy ties, a big one, a big cowboy tie. And he's got on some serious cowboy boots, and he's carrying a Gibson Hummingbird, a beautiful Gibson Hummingbird, Sunburst, great guitar. Pretty worn. It was obviously his number one instrument. He's got it, and he's got with him his wife, maybe his girlfriend, I don't know, but he's got with him his partner for the show, and they're going to preach, and they're going to sing, and they're going to praise God for the next half hour, and they're going to do it live on the radio, and it is abysmal. Neither one of them can sing. He can't pick. Now, on the weekends, they had a little band called Johnny and Gene and the Dixie Drifters. I guess their names were Johnny and Gene, but to me, he was always Reverend Finch. But Johnny, Gene, and the Dixie Drifters had a show, had a little band, and they played on the weekends. I actually went out and saw them a couple of times, and they were just as bad in the nightclubs as they were on the radio. But there they are, singing for the Baptist Church on the radio. She is done up in full Dolly Parton cowgirl regalia. Man, she's got hair higher than an air balloon. It's going all the way up there. She's cinched in and tied in, just not a small person, but she's in small people's clothes. And I don't want to get in trouble, so we'll just leave it at that. She's got them cowboy clothes on, and they're singing How Great Thou Art and Rock of Ages and all In the Garden and all the great gospel songs. And if you listen very closely, you can almost recognize them. You can almost tell what they're singing. But the great part about this is, again, I come in the morning, I'm pretty tired, I'm pretty worn out. I got on a nasty t-shirt and I got on a cowboy hat. Not a cowboy hat. I never had a cowboy hat on in my life. I had on a baseball hat, and I'm kicked back with the baseball hat, and pair of ratty tennis shoes and blue jeans with holes in them before this was a, you know, fashion thing. It was because that's what I had to wear. But anyway, I'm kicking there, and they're over there doing this very loudly. And I have to engineer this. Now, it's tough. It's tough to do when your head's hurting, when you might have had a beer or six the night before, and they're praising Jesus off key and twangy and loud. But I got through it, and I did my job because that's what I was there for, man. And so they're kicking it, and all of a sudden, now remember, we're above the Coca-Cola bottling company. We're literally above the bottling company for Coca-Cola. So that means there's a lot of sugar around. There's a lot of different ingredients around. I don't know what there's a lot of, I guess, Coca-Cola syrup around. I don't know what they make it out of. But so that meant there were a lot of bugs around. A lot of bugs. And some of those bugs down there in Virginia, in Tidewater, Virginia, were some of the most enormous cockroaches I have ever seen in my entire life. These were big cockroaches. Big cockroaches. I mean, thumb-sized cockroaches. Not little, oh, look, that can fit through that crack there. No, these were serious. And they popped up. You got used to them after a while. You got used to a lot of things when you're working at the station after a while. You got used to the fact that the cockroaches were going to be around. You got used to the fact that if you're going to flush the toilet, you had to stick your hand inside the toilet tank and finagle the pump in there because the handle didn't work. You got used to all this kind of stuff. So I'm sitting there, and while the good reverend is going about his business and his girlfriend slash wife slash partner is standing there kind of staring off into space, I notice that one of our bigger boys, one of our bigger cockroaches, is crawling across the floor right in the direction of their microphone. He's just kind of headed that way. And these things were fearless. They had no fear of men. They were bigger than most of us, so they had no fear. And it's just kind of crawling that way. And I'm wondering what's going to happen when one of them or both of them notices that they've got company on their radio program this morning. And, well, I'm going to tell you what happened. I can't say what the good reverend said on the air, but he did. He said it on my airwaves, because when he brought up the name Jesus Christ the next time, it was not in praise. And there were a few other words that went after it. And she screamed and he yelled and they stomped and the cockroach got away. And I kind of cut the microphones and got everybody to settle down and said, yeah, we got a lot of those. And he said a lot of stuff about the station in general, about how he paid to be on the air and how that was just disgusting and on and on and on. And then everybody calmed down, cooler heads prevailed, and we got back to, you know, imitation Elvis and his Dolly Parton girlfriend praising Jesus for the next 10 minutes. And then I said, you got to take it up with the boss. I have nothing to do with it. They live here, and, you know, that's that. So that was part of my Sunday morning, that Sunday morning. It was a fun job. Now, you're not going to find that kind of thing in a hermetically sealed radio station somewhere in a building in downtown Cleveland. It's just not going to happen anymore, you know? It's not going to have those moments. And I cherish those moments. I cherish the time that I almost set the radio station on fire because I was hungry. And as I might have alluded to in some earlier programs, I was not allowed to cook in my room. So there was no hot plate. I wasn't allowed to cook there. And I was hungry for some hot food. And it was late. I think probably, you know, again, a lot of stuff happened on Sunday because there was nothing happening on Sunday. There was nothing to do on Sunday. Blue Law still existed. Nobody was open. And so a lot of stuff happened then because you looked for things to do, mischief to get into. Mischief, a great word you don't hear enough anymore. So anyway, I had bought some Jiffy Pop popcorn. Now, I don't know if you guys remember Jiffy Pop popcorn or if it even exists anymore, but it was popcorn that came in an aluminum kind of pan with a handle on it, and then had aluminum over top of it, and you peeled off the paper on the top, and then you could pop the popcorn right there in the thing that it came in. It was kind of like a pan of popcorn, had the oil or whatever inside of it. All you had to do was supply heat, and you could pop popcorn. And I was craving popcorn, craving something warm, something that night. So I got to thinking, well, you know, at the radio station, the studio is heated by natural gas. There's a little natural gas heater sitting right in the studio, right behind where the DJ's chair is. And there's a little blue flame in there, and that's heat. And I can put this Jiffy Pop popcorn on top of that heater there, and I can shake it back and forth, and I get the heat hot enough to cook this popcorn. And that's what I'm going to do. So I bought the Jiffy Pop popcorn, saved it. I think I got it on a Friday and waited till Sunday. I figured there'd be nobody in the station. Station was a daytimer, went off the air on Sunday night. There's not going to be anybody there. I went in with my key and I go upstairs and I get the little gas heater cranked up. Get it going, get that natural gas going, and the heater's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And I take my Jiffy Pop, take the little paper thing off the top, and I put it on top the heater, right? I got it on top the heater. And I'm waiting. And it's getting hot in that studio, let me tell you. It's getting hot in there. But the popcorn is just not popping, man. It's just not going. So I'm like shaking it back and forth, rubbing it on top the heater. Definitely damaging the paint on the top of the heater. Just trying to get this popcorn to go. Just trying to get it to go. And I'm rubbing it and it's not going. It's not going. It's just not popping, man. So I'm getting more and more upset. I want to have my dad burn popcorn. So I'm just scraping it on top of, and yeah, you get it, right? I'm scraping that little flimsy aluminum pan on top of the heater. And I make a hole in the bottom of the little aluminum pan. And whatever is in there is oil, starts dripping out right into the gas, natural gas heater. The flame was pretty impressive that came blowing out of that gas heater when that little bit of oil hit the little blue pilot flame in there. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. And it blew the Jiffy Pop thing out of my hand. Fortunately, that was the only pyrotechnics of the evening. The Jiffy Pop got all scorched on the bottom. And of course, it stunk to high heaven. But I didn't burn the place down, which would have been, I think, maybe a firing offense. I'm not sure, but I think it would have been. I gathered everything up, took all the evidence, took it down to a trash can, a dumpster somewhere along the side of Tom's Diner, tossed it in the diner, hoped that the diner didn't catch on fire or the dumpster didn't catch on fire, went back upstairs, opened up all the windows, just did everything I could to get the stink out, and went away like I didn't do anything at all. Came back the next morning and was doing my show. And Charlie, the engineer, was there. Charlie's looking all around. He's going, something caught on fire in here. Can you smell that, shitbird? Can you smell that? And I'm like, I smell something, man, but I don't know what it is. He said, no, something is on fire in here. Something is electrical fire. Something caught on fire. I have to figure out what it is. That poor old man spent days going through every piece of antiquated equipment in that studio, trying to figure out what caught on fire. Now, the upside of this was he managed to tell the boss that he thought a few of the things that we had been laboring with since I had been there and were out of date about 25 years before I got there needed to be replaced. So he replaced a few of the items because I caught Jiffy Pop popcorn on fire in the main broadcast studio at WDDY. And I believe the statute of limitations has run out on that. So should anybody from there hear this, they can't get me in too much trouble. You know, it occurs to me that I've been maybe a little too, I don't know, hard on Edna Mae Heading and her musical abilities. But I don't want you guys to get the wrong impression. She was a healthy break between what I was required to normally play on the radio station. I'm going to give you an example of that. I was just thinking about this. I think I have a copy of a Lenny D song. Lenny D, the organist. There's only organ, you know, no singing, just Lenny playing the organ. I think I have a copy of Lenny D's Steppin' Out. And then you'll hear why I was very happy to play Edna May. Hold on. Sports fans. Lenny D and Steppin' Out. And that's why I was happy to play Edna May Henning all day, every day, and twice on my Sundays. Because I got to listen to that stuff all day long, every day. And I was a kid, and that's not my kind of music. Maybe it's somebody's kind of music, but it's not my kind of music. So, yeah. Lenny D. Don't think I've listened to him since. Well, I'm going to play one more song for you. I'm not going to do a lot of music on these shows. I'm going to do mostly rambling and talking and telling stories. But this seems to be an apropos song for a show like today. So I'll close out the show with this one.
Well, you can't turn him into a company man. You can't turn him into a whore. And the boys upstairs just don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play. And he don't wanna change what don't need to change. And there goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. There goes the was the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. And there goes the last human voice. Sometimes it'll kinda come in, and I'll bust a move and remember how it was back then. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. There goes
of course, Tom Petty and the Last DJ. And I'm not the last DJ, but I'm a DJ that wishes there were still kind of DJs. I know there are a lot of folks like me out here laboring in the places and doing it by themselves. No commercial backup, no big companies. And God bless each and every one of you. Thank you guys for listening to radio. I'll see you next time around. Edna May, why don't you sing us out one more time?
Barely see beyond. good man. Mama, forgive your truckin'.